Welcome to a weekly review of North Dakota's legislative news. Now, here's your host, Dave Thompson, with North Dakota Legislative Review.
Hello there, I'm Dave Thompson with North Dakota Legislative Review, and we are approaching the two-minute warning, to use a sports analogy, in the North Dakota legislative session. There are a lot of issues still out there to decide, though. One thing that has come up is this latest override of a governor's veto. The veto concerned the powers and duties of the legislature's budget section. Well, the governor vetoed that bill, and one of the reasons he did is he feels that it's an unconstitutional delegation of authority to a subset of the legislature. Well, the legislature overrode the governor's veto, and now we're hearing some whispering, at least, that there could be another lawsuit over this. There was a lawsuit about it 2 years ago. Meanwhile, as we mentioned before, you know, the old saying is whiskey's for drinking, water's for fighting, and there's going to be some fights over water funding. It sounds like there might be a conclusion. I've been hearing that. But the FM diversion project wants $820 million from the state, and the legislature so far has okayed $703 million. That may still be a fight, too. Also, there's been talk about what to do with the proceeds of the legacy fund. There's going to be a study. At least that's where it is right now. There's a study about the legacy fund earnings and where they go. Legislators want to create new buckets, or as Senate Majority Leader Rich Warder calls them now, silos, with a focus on roads and one-time spending projects. So after debating a number of ideas for legacy fund earnings, lawmakers will now try to come up with a more permanent solution. This study is being formed to look at setting guidelines for spending legacy fund earnings in the future. Political correspondent Chad Mira talked with the House Minority Leader about that idea.
Joining me now is House Minority Leader Representative Josh Poche. Representative, thanks for your time today.
Thanks, Chad. Great to be with you.
Now, one thing that we've been discussing most legislative session this time around is what to do with legacy fund earnings, and it looks like it's a topic that could merit a study moving forward. What's the latest with that?
You know, we're starting to look at the fact that in the next biennium, it's anticipated to be about $450 million of earnings. And while that's much more than anyone expected, we also have a variety of probably 141 different ideas on what to do with the legacy fund. So by putting it into a study, it allows us to have a more direct focused conversation. Are we going to focus on property taxes? Are we going to focus on buildings? Are we going to focus on healthcare? Kind of allow groups and people to meet and talk about the issue and hopefully come to some sort of resolution as we go into the next session.
And do you have your own ideas of some things you'd like to see it used for?
Well, I know when I voted for the legacy fund, when it was on the ballot, my first thought was to help fund education. You know, we continue to want to make sure we have high quality education throughout the state. And so for me, my preference automatically is to see how we can continue to support local education through the K-12 system, but also that's a way that we can reduce property taxes. So that's my first bet. But like I said, there's 140 other opinions.
Like you said, 141 other opinions. We've seen a lot of them come up this legislative session. Moving forward, if we look ahead to the next session and we do have something more set in stone what these funds would be used for, how would that affect what you guys are trying to get done here during a session?
Well, I think first and foremost, it would help us kind of know ahead of time. Let's say there is a great collaboration. We all agree it's going to be on K-12 education. Well, then we know as we start the session that the money that we're already putting from the general fund to K-12 education might be offset with this investment from the legacy fund. But it also may mean that we're going to add more money to K-12 education as well. So it allows us to look at the fluid dynamics of, you know, the investment and how strong that's been, as well as the cash that'll come to the state and how we can hopefully invest it for the future.
Would also help maybe with the workload, so many bills looking at ways to spend the legacy fund. If this was more concrete, would it help kind of weed through some of those things?
I think so, especially knowing that, again, any bill is going to need 51% of us, or 50% plus one, to support it. So I think it'll give us a direction of where these monies are going to go, especially as, like I said, we're looking at $450 million potentially in the next biennium. The following biennium, it's going to be even more money. So we're looking at large sums of cash.
Potentially a big impact. Right. Representative Boucher, thanks for your time.
Thanks, Chad.
And we're now joined by Senator Nicole Pullman. She's a Republican from Bismarck. Senator, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me. It's nice to be here.
And you are now on the Appropriations Committee. And I've wanted to ask appropriators, you used to be on policy committees.
Right.
Why go from a policy committee to a numbers committee?
Well, initially I thought I would miss the policy committee, but what I have recognized over the years as a legislator is that the Appropriations Committee is where all of the big decisions are made, all of the real decisions are made, because in the end, policy usually costs money. And so in order to have a seat at the table in the conversations that are most important to my constituents, I thought that appropriations was the best place to be.
So is it harder work being on appropriations?
It's just different work. It's a slower pace in the beginning of the session, and then it's a much faster pace now here at the end. The decisions that get made in the final period of the session are usually made in appropriations. So it's busy now, but I have really enjoyed my time there.
It is a sprint now, is what you're saying.
It is a sprint now.
Well, you heard about the legacy fund and this potential study that's going to happen. Are there any thoughts that you have about what the earnings of the legacy fund should be used for?
Well, I think that the study is so important, and I think it's probably one of the most important things we will study over the interim, because if you ask anybody, how do you think the legacy funds should be spent? Everyone has a different answer. And so for us to come to some consensus as to what that money will be spent on, because you have to remember, we do still have people saying we shouldn't be spending a dime, not even of the interest. And so to have some consensus over what types of projects and what types of spending would be good, I think is the most important part of that study. And certainly I liked Governor Burgum's concept that they would be legacy projects, things, big things that leave a legacy. I do enjoy that piece of it. Certainly, I thought about when we went through the statewide interoperability radio network conversation. I thought, this is a project that we have tried to fund for a number of sessions, and we're finally figuring it out now. This would have been a prime opportunity for a legacy fund project. So I think there are lots of options out there. I'm not really thrilled about the concept of buckets or silos. I think we have enough buckets, and so I'm hoping that we get away from that concept as far as legacy fund dollars are concerned, but it's so important for us to come to consensus on what legacy funds should be spent on.
One of the suggestions of the legacy fund earnings is coming from the House, and the Senate overturned it at one point. The House passed and overturned it. I'm talking about the income tax buy-down plan. It's back in a budget bill for the state tax commissioner. How do you feel about that?
I'm frustrated that it's back. I just don't think that that's the way we want to spend those legacy fund dollars, certainly as early in the process as we are in terms of having a legacy fund. And I just think that after we saw what happens when the commodities we depend upon go down, I really don't like taking a stool leg out of that three-legged stool. So I think it's important for us to maintain the income tax for now and make sure that we have some continuity and just a reliable source of income for the state. So I'm not in favor of that. A little frustrated because I think we pretty decisively defeated that in the Senate, but everything is up for discussion in the final days.
As we know, nothing is final until the final gavel falls.
Correct.
But your point is well taken about commodities, and commodities are volatile by their nature. And that's two legs of our stool.
It is. And so that third leg, making sure that that's a pretty consistent and dependable revenue source, I think is important at this stage of the game.
In your appropriations work, what's been the most challenging bill you've had to deal with?
Wow, that's a great question. I think one big challenge that we're facing here at the end is on the ITD budget, information technology. We have been talking about unification, which is one of the governor's main initiatives, and they have done a lot of work going into that. The House was adamantly opposed to unification and didn't include it in any of their budgets. The Senate took the opposite state. And so now we have a compromise that has been worked out. Initially, it should have been 14 agencies and about 145 employees that would unify our technology. And now it's down to 5 agencies and I think 95 employees. And so there was a lot of debate on the Senate floor as to whether or not that's a time to compromise. I think that that conversation may shift as this bill goes into conference committee, because there are some people who say there are plenty of times to go halfway and unification is not one of them. And so I think that that's been one of the more complex issues that we've had to understand.
And one of the things I've heard about is this pilot project. the five agencies would be a pilot project.
Right. And from the governor's perspective, I think he considers the cabinet agencies, the original 14 agencies, a pilot project. And so they want to see up to $14 million of savings. They want to see unification of technology, not just on the cybersecurity side, but on the customer service side, right? People in the private sector are working with Amazon, and they can click on something they want, and it's on their doorstep the next day. The way our technology interfaces with the folks who use it, the taxpayers aren't really getting a very good experience. And so they really see that as part of the advantage of this.
We're still trying to find our way, I think. And that's probably general, not just state government, but I think everybody's trying to find their way as you start talking about artificial intelligence. Absolutely. You started to talk connectivity, new, whatever they call it, 5G. Mm-hmm. But I remember the days of the old teletype machines, and they used to type on manual typewriters. So we've come a long ways, and so we're just trying to get our arms around this.
Absolutely. And our arms getting around it, it's a big project even in terms of security. That's a whole new issue too, cybersecurity. We have 5.7 million attacks every month on government entities here in North Dakota. And so we have invested $11 million more dollars in cybersecurity, also another initiative of the governor's and of ITD.
Mm-hmm. And that's something people do not realize, that even in a state like North Dakota, you think it's a small potatoes, but 5.7 million attacks per month, and that's huge.
It's significant. And taxpayers don't have a choice as to whether or not they share their information with state agencies. And so it's our obligation, I think, to protect that information and to protect the millions of dollars that could also be at stake. So cybersecurity is very important. And like I said, unification is complex, and those conversations are still ongoing.
Now, the Senate Appropriations Committee has kind of informal subcommittees looking at particular budgets. What were the ones you were most interested in, or what you were on?
I have focused mostly on career and technical education and the Department of Public Instruction. Those are my wheelhouse as a teacher and someone who came from the Education Committee. I enjoy those issues, and I really feel strongly about certain things that need to be funded. And so those have been the two budgets that I've been most interested in.
So did the committee get into on-time funding?
We did. There are two versions of on-time funding. And so, as you know, bigger districts, growing districts are and have been asking for on-time funding for quite a long time. Smaller districts are a little bit more concerned about that. So there are two versions. The Senate has a version where on-time funding happens in the second year of this biennium, and they get the full payment. And the House version does the same thing, only they give you only half the payment, 50% of the per pupil payment. And they gradually phase in 60%, 70% over 5 years. And so both chambers understand the need to move to on-time funding. They just have different approaches. So it will be interesting to see what the policy committee decides in terms of what is best for on-time funding. The House thinks theirs is better because it coincides with forcing everybody onto the formula. We have lots of schools who are on the funding formula, and then we have lots of schools who are off. And that's starting to be a little bit more controversial between school districts. And so we want to make sure we get everybody on the formula, and they have a timeline to do that over the next 5 years.
Have per pupil payments been set now?
They have. We are doing 2 and 2% increases. And we had talked in the Senate about 2 and 3, but then when we looked at all the different tweaks that we need to make, whether it's on-time funding or getting baseline resets in there, we've made some changes to the formula that actually cost far more than the $11 million that extra percentage point on the per pupil payment would have made. So it's a strong investment in public education, and I think the school districts across the state are pleased.
Now, this is something where you know, you've been around as long as I have. I remember the days where we talked about declining enrollment, and all of a sudden the oil boom hit, and school districts across the state are seeing growth in enrollment, and I mean, we're talking about growth for a while. And, you know, 2 years ago, the legislature had to do flat funding. There wasn't any cuts in K-12 funding, but there wasn't any increases either. And you can argue that with increased enrollment and just the cost of doing business, school districts did get, in effect, less money. So you're trying to get that back up if you can.
We are. And like I said, the 2 and 2% certainly helps all districts. And then the other tweaks that we're making in the formula, the on-time funding helps our big districts significantly, the growing districts, and some of those baseline resets can help with the smaller districts as well.
I'd also like to talk about a little bit about higher education. That I think that bill is still pending?
Believe so, yes. They are still discussing a number of things.
Mm-hmm. How do you think it's gone in terms of higher education and maybe restoring some of the funding there?
I think that they have done a good job with that budget. You know, higher education, a few years back, we moved to the funding formula based on completed credits, which I think has been a nice, dependable source of revenue, and also holding universities accountable for making sure students aren't just taking courses, but they are finishing them and graduating. So I think that's important. There's been a lot of conversations about different buildings on different campuses and how we will decide which buildings go up and how we will decide how to fund them. Both the Senate and the House have different opinions on bonding, and so that's been a big conversation. We have, a lot of us have been in the Senate and the House since we haven't bonded at all. We've always paid cash because the state was in pretty good fiscal condition. So a lot of people in the legislature hear that word bonding and they start to have a little bit of a panic attack. And
yeah,
so
a bit of nervousness.
Yes, a little, yes, considerable trepidation, especially on the House side when it comes to bonding. And even though the Bank of North Dakota has come to us and said the levels that we propose are responsible, this is a good idea, I think that you're still going to see some reluctance on the bonding concepts. And so they're trying to work a way where they can pay some cash for some of these buildings.
It seems like one of the biggest areas of consternation on the bonding bill is that ag building at NDSU. It's out in one chamber, it's in another chamber, conference committee working that out. Where do you see it?
I'm not sure where that will go. It's difficult because it's a building that I know NDSU has international visitors too, right? It's not just about NDSU, but that's about the state of North Dakota and showing off and showcasing the research done here. It's also one of the buildings that was initially in that bill, and certainly other buildings have come in and out of that bill in the meantime, so it's a little bit controversial that it's not there. I'm not sure where it will end up in the end, if it will end up in the final version or not.
Two buildings seem to be, there's agreement at least that they need to be done, and that's the Dunbar Hall at NDSU, mm-hmm. and also that building at Valley City State University,
yes.
to replace a building that's on the wrong side of the dike.
It's basically on the wrong side of the dike and literally on the shores of the river, and so we certainly hope that that will be in the final version, because they have been waiting a long time to get that fixed, and it's just a necessity.
Where did you graduate from? I just have to ask.
I am a UND grad.
Okay, so I have to ask you, you're familiar with Gamble Hall?
I'm familiar with Gamble Hall, and I was referring to Gamble Hall as one of those buildings that was not initially in the original bill and has made its way in. And the reason it's made its way in is because it's such a worthy project. They have a $20 million donor ready to go that wasn't there when the session began. And so we are excited about that. I think it will really transform the way the campus looks when you drive down University. And more importantly, it's going to give a much more modern business environment to our business majors there. So I think it's just going to be great for the education of our students, recruitment of new students, and it's going to look beautiful.
One thing that's come out of the session that probably doesn't get a lot of attention, but is really important. It has to do with human service and these human service zones, these 19 zones. That really sailed through almost.
It did. And I think that it's just something we've been talking about for so long. It's one of those initiatives that we really tested the waters first in prior sessions and saw that this was really the way to go to create efficiencies and, more importantly, to ensure that services are provided to people no matter where they live, right? Whether you're in the rural area or the urban area, we want to make sure that everybody has access to all the important services provided by human services.
And of course, there was all the discussion about behavioral health, and there seems to be quite a bit of movement. Not when the Schulte report came out, there was not enough money to do a lot of things. Then there was a subsequent report. Now that the coffers look better, there's more movement in that area.
I'm really proud of the movement that we've made in behavioral health. Certainly the governor's attention and the first lady's attention on addiction issues has been an important factor on that side of things. And I think that people realize that we really do have a mental health crisis, a behavioral health crisis, not only in the adults, but in our students as well. One of the pieces of that puzzle that I am most excited about is the $1.5 million that we are investing in getting mental health professionals into the public schools so that we aren't saying, let's train teachers to be mental health professionals, because we just know that that's not going to probably work. The idea that we would get professional mental health professionals into our schools and begin to bill Medicaid, I'm hoping that eventually we bill insurance so that kids can go see a counselor while they're at school. It really changes the way they feel about themselves and certainly allows us to really focus on how to keep those kids' mental health in check and do it in a way where it's in their natural environment and makes them feel comfortable and where really kids see that it's just as important as their physical health. So I think that that's a transformational shift where we're starting to look for professionals to come into the public schools.
But there's always a workforce issue too.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that's really, you know, one of the things I like about that is because certainly the professionals coming in, you know, in Bismarck, they're going to be employed by Sanford, right? And so maybe they come in 2 days a week or 3 days a week and we know when they're coming in, but it allows us to share some of those professionals. But yes, it is a huge workforce issue, and if I could tell all those kids going into college or technical school today, you know, go into addiction counseling, go into psychiatry. Going into a mental health field right now is so important. So we do need to continue to work on incentivizing people to go into that line of work.
Okay, in the few moments we have left, I have to ask, because I have asked everybody, when does the gavel fall?
Well, I was predicting April 26th, but I'm hearing whispers in the chamber that maybe that won't be adequate either. So I predict that maybe the 27th or the 28th, that they would keep us here at the end of next week and not allow us to go home, and that they would just keep us here until we get done to motivate us to work.
Sounds good. Senator Nicole Poolman, thank you very much for being our guest.
Thank you.
Pleasure. The State House has proposed a plan to help counties struggling with snow removal costs this year. An amendment on the table would give the National Guard budget an $8 million boost. As political correspondent Chad Mira tells us, that money will help towns dealing with snow and also with flooding costs.
It's been a tough season for road crews across the state.
It's just been an interesting winter and an interesting spring.
Borton County engineer John Sykes said the expenses have piled up. There's overtime pay for the plow drivers.
This winter we've done a lot of Friday, Saturday, and Sunday work, a lot of night work.
And maintenance.
We had a lot of repairs that we had to make, a lot of maintenance, and that goes along with running the equipment, you know, 10, 14 hours a day.
So state lawmakers want to help. An amendment has been added to the National Guard budget that would provide more than $8 million for non-oil producing counties across the state. A township could be eligible for $5,000 to cover snow removal and flood response expenses.
It was really expensive to take care of those things this spring, so most of the counties needed help.
Representative Jeff Magrum's district has been hit especially hard. Ashley alone has seen more than 110 inches of snow this year.
A lot of them have a little reserve, hopefully, so it could really be hard on most of the small towns.
Small towns that are still waiting for things to dry up.
Well, as the clock winds down, we have Chad Mirror here. As the clock winds down in the session, what have been your most interesting issues that you've been following?
Oh yeah, there's been a lot of interesting ones this year. One that sticks out, and we've heard a lot about from people here at the newsroom, the Sunday closing laws, the repeal of the Sunday closing laws. Very interesting story, and Representative Rose Jones even convincing her own father on the Senate side to vote for the bill. So that one sticks out in my mind. Another one that sticks out are some of the changes to the medical marijuana laws that we're seeing. The rollout has been taking a little longer than initially expected. Therefore, enrollment in the program, the patient count is a little bit lower than expected at this point in the program. So they're still looking at ways to expand access to medical marijuana, and we've seen a lot of ways to address that this session as well. Anything that you think stands out?
The whole discussion about the new Theodore Roosevelt Library and Museum has been fascinating. Also, all the idea about the constitutional amendments to put a few limits on the constitutional amendments that are introduced by initiative. That's been interesting to follow because they've come up with something and that has to go on the ballot and be voted on, which is a little ironic twist.
Yeah, that is a big one. We had two constitutional amendments on the last ballot, so that is something that could certainly shake up the election process moving forward. And you mentioned the library as well. We're still waiting to see how that shakes up, but this latest funding proposal doesn't include money from the Legacy Fund. It includes funding for the library, but from different sources. So it will be interesting to see if that gets approved. I know that's one that Governor Burgum has been pushing throughout the session, and a lot of eyes have been on that as well.
And the thing that you referenced early on in the program, the idea of studying what happens with the Legacy Fund earnings, I think that's going to be a study worth watching in the interim.
Absolutely. You know, as time goes on, those earnings are growing, and now we have a chance to use some of them. And so, as Representative Boucher said, there's 140 plus ideas on what to do with these. We've heard that from other lawmakers as well. So hopefully from this study, they can come up with a plan to give them more concrete ways of how they're going to use these fundings moving forward. So in future sessions, this isn't a repeated debate with 140 more ideas every couple of years.
Well, we'll be following all these issues. We still have some issues to follow. Mm-hmm. For Legislative Review, I'm Dave Thompson. Thanks for joining us.